You are listening to WWBC Coco, Merritt Island, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI Coco, Rockledge, 94.7 FM, W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, Indian Atlantic, Indian Harbor Beach, Satellite Beach, 100.7 FM, and W260CL, Coco, 99.9 FM.
Hello, space and treasure coast. This is Sita McGee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here on sunny Cocoa, Florida. We are heard on FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and AM 1510 WWBC, and also online everywhere in the world,
in the world, and on 1510wwbc.com, and as well as you can download the app. And that would be WWBC and listening in anywhere in the world to our humidity-fallen Central Florida.
Oh, like I like to say, our earthly journey called life. Okay. Anyone can listen on their earthly journey called life, right? It's a journey. It's a vacation, actually, for me. So we sit here in the studio every Monday, Samantha, Ellen, and myself, and we speak about issues that people usually talk about around the kitchen table. We call them kitchen table topics. We talk about things that are going on in our state, around the world, and right here in Brevard County, Florida. And I am happy today to have with us one of our sit-in councilmen. His name is Daniel McDowell. I hope I said that correct.
Yes, you did.
And Daniel is here. He was elected by the people of Brevard County, Florida, for City Council West Melbourne. And you're on your first term?
Yes, I am.
Welcome to our show.
Thank you.
And you're going to be on the second segment speaking about what you have learned since getting elected, why you run for office, why all of us should make a plan to vote, because that's the only way we could change things. You'll speak a little bit about sustainability and all the great things you're doing and your businesses, and talk to us about yourself in the second segment. Right.
Great. Thank you.
And our first segment is the guest that our friend Samantha is going to introduce, because Samantha has been asking me for months to speak about the Hemophilia Foundation. And being a nurse, I touched a little bit about that in nursing school 34 years ago. And today I'm going to get a lesson in it. So go ahead and introduce our first segment guests.
Our first segment is going to be with the amazing executive director of the Hemophilia Foundation of Greater Florida, my friend and family, Fran Haynes, and we have Bonnie Schwartz here with us, also our newest addition to the HFGF family. And welcome, Fran.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here, and I'm honored for your introduction, and I'm honored to be part of your family.
Right.
It's been a wonderful, wonderful family, and a wonderful, wonderful opportunity to be able to meet everybody and to be part of your life. Aww. And you part of ours.
Yes, and she has some nice shirts. And she gives us, and
yes, Bonnie, she bought us some swag today.
Yes, and Bonnie Schmidt, you're the development and marketing specialist.
Yes.
With the Hemophilia Foundation of Greater Florida.
Yes, I am. I am 3 weeks into being the development and marketing specialist.
Well, you know, we always hear about disorders of, you know, if you look at the human body from the top to the bottom, at any given time, something could go wrong, whether it's mental, whether it's physical, whether it's emotional, and even financial at some point, right? And we all have issues. But the Hemophilia Foundation was founded by a gentleman and his wife who had a son, that I understand, who had hemophilia, and there was no treatment available at that time. So maybe, Fran, you could give us a little history about the Hemophilia Foundation.
Yeah, I'm going to just do a little correction. The man who started our chapter, Calvin Dawson, mm-hmm. he himself had hemophilia. And it was during the 80s, you know, we have, the bleeding disorder community has a very interesting history. Hemophilia has been, bleeding disorders have been with us, as you know, forever. It was called the blue blood disease because it was with the Russian Tsar and royalty.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always been, it's a rare disorder, and it's always been a invisible disease. If you looked at somebody, you wouldn't, necessarily know they have a bleeding disorder.
That's right.
So Calvin and a group of other folks got together and decided to start our chapter to help people with bleeding disorders, to really be able to get more people involved and more awareness. And this was during the 80s, and we have a very interesting past because during the 80s, we had blood contamination where a lot of our folks got HIV and unfortunately passed away, and Hep C. All this happening, it really was a horrible, horrible tragedy. A lot of folks lost their family members, but there has to be a silver lining, and the silver lining is that the bleeding disorder community, because of the tragedy, took our blood in the United States of America and made it safe.
Gotcha.
So because of the bleeding disorder community, our blood safety, we made sure that blood safety was good for everybody.
I think I was, when I said the gentleman, I read where it says the National Hemophilia Foundation.
Yes, you are right.
Was founded by Robert and Betty Jane Henry in 1948.
Yes.
Because of their son Lee. And as I read about them and their advocacy, I could just see this family in front of me and how great 70 years later that people are still talking about what they have done. So you're right. In Florida, it's this gentleman.
And you are right.
I did my research.
You did good. Yes. You did really good. And I'm always so focused in Florida.
Yes, and the Henrys knew that there were so many people who had this disease, but they were isolated. And there was nothing that was being done at that time.
You're right.
So they put their money where their mouth is. So that not only were they able to help their son, because at that time, the life expectancy for a person with hemophilia was about 24 years of age.
Mm, yes.
And now, it's because of their advocacy and what they have done, God bless them, they're probably gone from this planet now. But what a legacy to leave behind.
Absolutely. And you're correct with your history. And my history is very myopic because I'm focused in Florida.
Florida, yes.
This year, we are 25 years old or young. So our organization is now in the 25th year. We became a chapter in December. So literally this year is 25 years, and we are a chapter of the National Hemophilia Foundation, and you are correct about the history there.
Right.
And we have our own history, like
25 years. So talk about the 25-year anniversary and some of the highlights.
Well, unfortunately, COVID kind of put a damper on a little bit of our highlights. But the bottom line is we've got, right now we're going back into doing in-person events, COVID-safe, CDC-safe events, and some of the highlights are we have walks. We just did our second walk. We have got a theater event planned, which we do every year. We've got programs planned. We have dinners. We have educational opportunities. And then other things we do, which are camp, our family retreat weekend. So these are things we do anyway.
Yes, yes.
So 25 years just means that we are here to stay, and we are 25 years young, and the best is yet to come.
It's wonderful. And Bonnie, we know that life is a work in progress, right? So how did you get involved with the Hemophilia Foundation?
Well, I have been out of work for quite some time. I came from a museum background, if you can believe that. I took some time off and took a pause in my career to care for my mother, who was suffering from dementia. And when that care process ended, I was looking for something to make a difference in lives, and not just artwork. And I saw the Hemophilia Foundation had an ad for a person in development and fundraising, and I thought, well, that's perfect. That checks off both boxes. I can do fundraising quite well, and it'll help me care for people and do something to make a difference in their lives.
Yeah. And where do you guys get most of your referrals?
From the hemophilia treatment centers.
Nurses, hospitals.
Yes.
Now, Sam, you have a child with the
von Willebrand's disease. Yes.
Right. You could say that in a mouthful.
Oh, trust me. I've
that's
from
in my
the best.
Research, too. So talk to our listening audience a little bit about, how did you discover that your son had hemophilia? Ecchymosis, bruises, whatever?
Bruises and extensive nosebleeds when he was small, and he went in New York undiagnosed. When we came to Florida, we had a very proactive pediatrician, And she sent us to what used to be Children's Medical Services, which is disbanded. It doesn't exist anymore. And there we were connected with Dr. Suffin and Dr. Juicy and Dr. Levy. And they are our HTC center out of Arnold Palmer, which Tyler's now aged out of. But that's okay. I'll be all right. And they immediately hooked us up with Fran and wanted us to see that there's more people like Tyler. And they have all these amazing resources and these programs. And they teach you how to advocate for your son. I thought I was dealing, you know, he was born with a heart murmur. I was dealing with that. And then that goes away and this comes. And then here came this amazing organization into my life. I am a very proud ambassador for the Bleeding Disorder Coalition of Florida, which we started. We're coming up on our third year now. I was also this year's National Hemophilia Foundation's Advocate of the Year. So that was a big up for our Florida chapters. And we advocate in Tallahassee. We went virtual this last year because of COVID, but we'll be in person for 2022. And we advocated in Washington. And they gave me a voice beyond my own voice. I know what it is to fight for my son. It's different when you fight for an entire community and you bring awareness. And I do have Daniel Hill. So I do want to thank Daniel for helping us to achieve the first proclamation and resolution out of the city of West Melbourne this last March for Bleeding Awareness Month.
Yeah, well, that's
month.
Why I thought it would be a good fit to have you
I'm
on today.
I'm so happy that they're both here
yeah,
together.
Yeah, it's just awesome.
Honor.
Well, here's the thing, right? It seems as though people get involved and engaged in something when it hits their families. Whether it's, you know, I know people who advocates for dementia, you know, Alzheimer's, or people are advocates for heart health, or maybe exercise, or eating right, something happens, and you say, uh-huh, this is what I'm going to get involved in. But a lot of people who are listening to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends today probably don't understand what is a bleeding disorder and what are the most common bleeding disorders, Fran. So maybe we could take some time to tell people today, what is a bleeding disorder?
It's your body's is not able to clot, and it is genetic. And there's no cure. So basically, if I were to bump my elbow, I may not bleed on the outside, but internally I would bleed. My elbow would get all swollen, and there would be a pool of blood in it. And the only way to prevent it or to be able to function is to have factor. So that's what your body's missing. Your body's missing in hemophilia factor A or B. In von Willebrand's disease, it's von Willebrand's factor.
It's A. That's A, right?
No, in fact, von Willebrand's factor.
It is named after a von Willebrand,
mm-hmm.
a man named von Willebrand.
Mm-hmm.
And then other bleeding disorders, factor 7, factor 5, factor 13, and then Glasman thrombosis. So there's, I don't know if I said that correctly, but they're all different types of bleeding disorders, and it's basically missing that factor protein, and there's a replacement which is called factor, which is extremely expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And prior to the Affordable Care Act, it was very difficult for patients to be able to get their product because we had caps, we had all types of interference in insurance. So when the Affordable Care Act came to fruition, it really changed our bleeding disorder community and other chronic diseases and disorders.
That's a yay for the Affordable
Care. Yeah,
absolutely.
But don't worry if you say a word wrong or something. Viewpoint with Sita and Friends is unscripted.
Okay.
Educational and quite informative. and people get through. They understand. Don't you worry about that.
Okay, well, I won't. But anyway, so that was been, it was really, really great. So that's been really, really a life changer. And we try to encourage our children to go to college and to get great jobs, whether you're a mechanic or a waitress or whatever, to make sure that you can get medical insurance.
That's
because
right.
Because you have to have this medicine in order to live. There is no cure.
So, and she educates very early on, because I believe we started those programs, Tyler was maybe 14. And they make it fun. We did Wonder Works.
Well, fall in love with your liver all over again.
We did Wonder Works.
You know, that's what I think about this when I think about hemophilia. Your liver is so important. The clotting factors, the platelets, all the little soldiers in your body that forms a prothrombin, time and the thrombin, and all the intrinsic factors that goes with it. And people don't understand. Once you, education is everything.
And the great thing is with the foundation, with these, with funds that are raised, she does, we do lots of educational programs. And I've never walked away from a program where we didn't learn something. Whether it was the importance of not getting on social media before you're emotionally and mentally ready. We've run programs on coming out of your shell. We've run programs yes. on why you need medical insurance. What are you going to do when you grow up? You don't have the luxury of, I don't want to do anything with my life because you need this 100,000 plus medication a month. So you have to have a good job that pays good money. And she doesn't just give us, the foundation doesn't just give them, give you the help. It gives you the tools to succeed. So my favorite saying is, we don't survive with a bleeding disorder. We thrive with a bleeding disorder.
That's right. And there's nothing to be ashamed of. No stigma attached. No. You know, one of the things on our nursing exam had always been to talk about vitamin K. If somebody's bleeding, all the nurses know, run and get their e-box with vitamin K. But I'm going to ask Bonnie to talk to us a little bit. How do you raise money for your mission at the Hemophilia Foundation of Florida, Greater Florida?
We have walks. We have programs for the walks that raise money. We have one coming up that is in Orlando. It's the Creepy Crawl. It's our 15th celebration of doing walks in Orlando. And it, it's going to be a big deal. We have, what are those Star Wars troopers?
Star Wars troopers.
Is that what they're called?
Ghostbusters.
Yes.
They're all going to be there. Caramel apples.
Yes.
Nice.
They're all going to be there.
And people, they put together teams that do the walk, and they raise money, and
whoever team raises the most money,
they
that's
get.
A good
we
thing.
Have prizes and contests for them, and they love it. We love it, and our community loves it.
Yeah. So, Fran, if somebody were to come to you and say, hey, you know, Fran is the executive director, Fran Haynes. Her name is so easy to say, Fran Haynes. If people say to you, how do you treat a bleeding disorder? How do you educate them about that?
So, really, I'm going to put it back to we have hemophilia treatment centers. And they are centers of excellence. And they literally treat a bleeding disorder from every aspect, from physical therapy to seeing the physician, to social work. It's got every aspect of orthopedics. Mm-hmm. And we send, if somebody were to call me, if Samantha were to call me and say, my son, Tyler, has a bleeding disorder. I am new. I don't know what to do. We would take their name, take their email, and then we'd say, okay, you need to take your child to a hemophilia treatment center. And we would refer them to a treatment center that's near them. And the treatment center is where they get all the medical education, because we are not a medical organization. We are an advocacy organization. They come to us where they apply the education and they learn life skills and they learn opportunities. And really, the whole premise behind having a advocacy organization such as ours is because sometimes people feel very alienated. They don't know anybody else with a bleeding disorder. They think that they're odd because they have something that nobody's heard of, that they don't know anybody. So having these educational opportunities and these fun programs and these walks and these golf tournaments gives people a chance to be with each other. Camp is huge.
Oh, camp is a life changer.
And it gives people a chance to interact and to share their stories and their information with one another so they don't feel isolated. So they don't feel like they're the only ones. And especially kids, you know, bullying was used to be a huge issue in bleeding disorders, because a child many years ago couldn't participate in kickball. You just couldn't do it because you could get hurt.
Yeah,
now you could.
Yeah.
If you go to your hemophilia treatment center and get your medicine and get your, you know, your all the information to take to your school. But it was kids would bully them. And you know, it was hard and it was sad. And when they go to camp, everybody's the same.
Right.
And they learn to be respectful of each other. And they learn to respect others. And they learn to have empathy, because it's hard. It's hard. But, and it's invisible, like I said before. So we're a village, and we all have a little part of a person or a community, and we all come together. And we all use each other's talents, and we all depend on each other.
We are a global village, and we should care.
And we do.
Yeah.
And people do. And there are very a lot of people who are super generous who don't have anybody with a bleeding disorder and who just want to do something and help us.
And some of the most common bleeding disorders are the nosebleeds, ecchymosis on the skin. Sometimes you have a cut and it's not healing. And it could also be caused by medications like heparin, anticoagulants,
well,
and things.
Well, it's so funny you said that because some people think because you have hemophilia or von Willebrand's disease and you cut yourself, you're going to bleed out. But you don't. You just bleed longer.
Or long bleeding.
Right. You don't bleed out and, you know, have to have, you know.
Like hemorrhage.
Yeah, you don't
no,
do
the
that.
The internal injuries are worse. Like the muscle bleeds or... You know, hit to the head with the ball, hematomas, things of those nature are more, you know, more
yes,
worrisome.
And it's also painful.
Mm, yeah, they are very
well,
painful.
And it's also about the coalition cascade, right? When it
right.
forms that clot.
The clotting
that,
cascade.
That more
yes.
important clotting factor, right? Because sometimes you get a cut if you're doing dishes or something, you get, and all of a sudden, you know, okay, you can stop that with pressure or whatever. But with somebody with a bleeding disorder, it will take a longer time
right,
to form that important plug.
And it doesn't always stay. The plug can always go. But so that's, you know, a Band-Aid is always, we love Band-Aids.
Yes,
to say
yes.
The least.
Yeah.
But, you know, the only thing I would like to say is that our walk is October 30th at Baldwin Park in Orlando. And we cover the whole state of Florida. So our programs and services, we make sure that everybody in the state of Florida has the opportunity to be engaged and to participate. So so when we do our walks, regardless of where we do them, and you want to come. It's so much fun. And
is there a cost to walk?
It is free, but we ask folks to raise money. We are
donate something.
Donate
yes,
$5.
Yes.
You know, it's so funny because a medical alert costs $30. So if you want to pay for a medical alert, that's awesome because we encourage everybody to have a medical alert or a comfy cat for a child who's a toddler and who we don't want them to bump their heads. That's $130. So every penny, at least 90%, 90 cents of every dollar goes right back into the bleeding.
We just recycle it back.
And
so
it, yes.
So Fran, he's given me 2 minutes up. So in 2 minutes, maybe in a minute and a half, you could talk to us a little bit. If somebody were to say to you, Ms. Fran Hayes, what is the mission and the programs and services you offer? What would you say to them in an hour?
I would say our mission is to improve the quality of life for people with bleeding disorders. And the programs, some of our greatest programs and opportunities is our Camp Spirit summer camp for children with bleeding disorders. It's at a medically supervised camp. We partner with Camp Boggy Creek. Our family retreat weekend and our emergency financial assistance fund is for people who are having basic life support issues and need assistance. Specifically, my favorite thing in everything that we do is to help with some medical costs. If you have dental issues and
yes.
your insurance does not take those, we will do that. We will do it up to a certain amount of money. If you're having issues where, let's say you have a bill that you couldn't afford with your insurance, your health insurance, and you can't get treatment, we will pay that bill. If you have rental issues, and let's say you had to stay out of work for 3 weeks, and because your son or your daughter had to have surgery or they were not well due to their bleeding disorder, we will help you with that. And we do referrals with the social workers, so we work hand in hand with the hemophilia treatment centers. But I take great pride in I think we've probably spent more than $60,000, if not more, a year helping our patients and their families with health issues or basic life support issues so they can move forward and not get stuck. Because, like I said before, bleeding disorder is very expensive. And insurance, although you do have insurance, you still have payments. You still have things you have to pay.
So for our listeners who are tuning in, we're speaking with Fran Hayes, and she's the executive director at the Hemophilia Foundation of Greater Florida. And she brought Bonnie Schwartz.
Uh-huh.
Schwartz with her.
You got it.
Schwartz, yeah.
You did
She's
it.
She's the development and marketing specialist with the Greater Orlando Hemophilia Foundation. But give us a website if somebody's tuned in and they want to go and contact you.
www.hemophiliaflorida.org, or you can call us 800-293-6527. And remember, it's hemophiliaflorida.org.
You know what hemophilia means? It means blood and love.
Well, we are full of love.
Yeah,
yes, we are.
That's part of my research. And I was trying to learn all the words and where it came from.
You just taught me something. Yeah. I had no idea.
So, you know what? Life is about an education, right? No matter what subject we're talking about. And I think it's great that you all advocate and you educate and you make people fall in love with the idea that, listen, you might have something wrong, but it's not the end of the world. Mm-mm. You make people wholesome again, Fran, and that's wonderful.
Well, I will tell you that the greatest joy I have is seeing a little one grow up and marry. And I've been fortunate to see them get married and have children of their own. And that's been such a blessing to me. So I'm the lucky one. I'm the one who gets to be with everybody and meet, make new friends and learn. I learned today. I didn't know hemophilia meant love and blood. So yes. There you go. Oh.
And you forgot one thing in your spew. You also give scholarships, which we are extremely thankful for.
College scholarships, absolutely.
That's wonderful.
We're very proud of those, too.
I was wondering, you know, in the hospital when babies are born, we get a lot of information. Do you all reach out to the nurseries and the newborn in the hospitals just to make sure that mothers have this information? Because I'll tell you what, a lot of mothers...
It's not part of the NICU testing.
Yeah, they are very scared if they see blood pooling under a child's elbow or head or something.
We do not, only because they need to go to their hemophilia treatment center and get diagnosed. Usually within the first day or two, they get... Now, if there's a history, they already know that they have to go and do the test. And because, you know, it is genetic and it's through the mother.
Which we learned that, too, because that explained a lot of stuff on this side.
Yeah, right. And or with Von Willebrand's, it could be through the mother or the father. So it is just, we are there when the hemophilia treatment center gives them our information and they call, then we're there for them. But we don't, as far as the medical, we make sure that they are diagnosed appropriately and correctly.
Thank you so much, Fran and Bonnie, for joining us today. Zita, thank you for having them on.
Thank you for having us.
We look
so
forward
much fun.
To a fantastic 15th Creepy Crawl in Orlando on October 30th. Thank you
At
so much for joining us.
4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Thank you so much for joining us today.
We'll be right back with Danielle McDowell.
Portions of Viewpoint with Zita and Friends is sponsored by the friends and family of Zita Begee, author of 18 Brothers and Sisters, and founder of Simply Zita Skincare, and these great sponsors. When you need medical care and need it fast, MedFast Urgent Care is faster and less expensive than emergency rooms. MedFast is open 7 days a week, now with 13 locations, including one in Volusia County. With so many MedFast Urgent Care centers, there is a MedFast near you. MedFast offers top quality care that is close by, and the number is easy to remember. That is 321-MEDFAST. You just call 321-MEDFAST. No one wants to wait in an emergency room for hours and get even sicker when you get the high bill. What you want is medical care fast. That's why you call MEDFAST, where most patients are seen and treated in less than an hour. So when you need medical care fast, call 321-MEDFAST. MedFast. Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great-tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000, 321-268-5000, or visit them on the web at dixiecrossroads.com. Champion Home Healthcare, keeping your loved one happy, healthy, and at home. Available at 321-306-2551. Once again, 321-306-2551. Champion Home Healthcare is ACHC accredited and licensed, Medicare certified, and a TRICARE provider. Champion Home Healthcare, 306-2551.
There's something special about the place we call home. It's the place we live our lives, spend time with family and friends, and make our own. At St. Francis Reflections Hospice, we consider it a privilege to care for you wherever your home may be. We put our hands, hearts, and skills into providing high-quality hospice care in your home. To learn more about how we reflect life, love, and compassion, visit www.reflectionslsc.org.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in sunny Cocoa, Florida. We are on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, and 100.7. And we're also heard worldwide on the web, Mr. Paul, all over the United States, and India, Canada. Anyone who's tuned into radio can listen to us.
That's right, by tuning in to 1510. That's 1510wwbc.com, or download the app either from the Apple App Store or the Google Play Store by just putting in WWBC. Also, TuneIn is another great app that you also can follow along with the Sita and Friends and all of our great programming here.
Well, what a great segment with Fran Haines and Bonnie Schwartz.
Yep.
You know, in nursing, we do a lot of, we take a lot of doctor's orders to check the CBC. And oftentimes we look at the hematocrit and the hemoglobin, and you don't think twice, you just report it. But when you do a show on the bleeding disorder, anemia comes to mind, clotting factors come to mind, hemophilia now, and now I'll be more aware when I look a test too, you know what I mean? But anyways, our second segment is with Daniel McDowell, and I like his name because it's easy to say it. He's a councilman here in West Melbourne. He was elected to the city council in 2020. Featured earlier this year in the Florida Today article as the first openly gay elected official in Brevard County. Daniel was born in Chicago into a large Irish Catholic family, hence the word McDowell. After high school, he completed his degree at St. Louis University in apprentice program in healthcare logistics, and you're a graduate of Georgetown University, the executive program. Your bio is so long, Dan, that I'm going to let you talk to us a little bit and our listening audience about yourself and your family-oriented self and all the stuff you've gotten involved with. So welcome to our show.
Well, thank you, Sita and Samantha. It's good to be here, and quite an honor and a privilege. An added privilege was being able to sit in and listen to your prior guests. Quite impressive organization. As you know, I am also a businessman, but before I get started, I wanted to share a few years ago, I was inspired when I went to an event and I was listening to these individuals, these candidates, talk about why they were running. And Sita, you were one of them.
Thank you.
And you inspired me.
Oh,
actually,
how sweet.
It's not scripted, that I'm kind of throwing that at you, but the reality is that your words, you were so impressive. You were so committed. And it was nursing and host of a talk show and such a inspiration to be a public servant. And I thought, yes, I love that. And I want to know more about that. And that was one of the reasons.
Well, thank you. That really warms my heart because you don't know whose life you impact, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
But I read your bio and I saw where you had 7 grandchildren.
Yes.
You're happily married to a friend,
Bill McKay.
Bill McKay, which I love Bill. Bill, yes, supported me when I was running for office, and you did too. And talk to us a little bit about how running for office impacted your family.
Well, it was an eye-opener because I didn't realize that never running before for public office, it was, you have to start from scratch, basically not knowing, you know, what I should say and what I shouldn't say. And I was coached by a lot of good people that said, you know, just be yourself, be truthful, and, you know, let the great citizens of West Melbourne decide whether or not you're a viable candidate.
Yeah. And, you know, when I see you, what I think about, you know, there's so much division right now in our nation, whether it's race relations, whether it's religion, whether it's whatever it is, right? We have a lot of divisions, whether a person's immigrants, illegal people on the border. And when I see you, Dan, what I think about is the middle of the road guy that can listen to both sides and compromise. and listen to people in general, and don't put a label on that person, which political affiliation they belong to, what race they belong to. It's just all of us in this big global village trying to do our best where we put people first. It's about food, air, water, shelter, and then you leave the planet.
Sounds like a sustainability segue. But I will say that I do, if I can have one thing that your audience, listening audience, can appreciate is the fact that I'd like to dispel the divisiveness that goes on. At least my experience in being elected is I get along great with our city council and our and my colleagues.
Right, because you get back what you put out, and you are a guy that you're likable.
Thank you.
Yeah, people enjoy...
Approachable, honest.
Yeah, yeah, you're honest, you're approachable, and people know that you have their best interests at heart.
My favorite part of watching him during the campaign was it was a family affair.
Yeah.
His granddaughters were out there helping, and everybody was helping him put up signs, and he even corrected me because I forgot the word four, and he was like, no, don't put it out, you got to put the word four on it.
Yeah.
So it was awesome to have that interactive learning experience because we were both like, we don't know what we're doing here, but we're just going to go for
so
it.
So you're also a business owner.
In addition
to being a member of the West Melbourne City Council. Talk to us about your business and what do you do?
A small business that produces, manufactures through seamstresses here in Central Florida, a product that we sell to NICUs in hospitals. My background is supply chain in healthcare. I was doing that for about 30 years, and that's what I relocated here from the Midwest to do supply chain. And after my wife had passed away, the family said, well, let's do something together. And that was what we decided to do a product, purchase a company that was small company that was here since 1997 called Snoodle,
mm-hmm.
which is a Dutch word for snuggle.
Oh, okay. We're learning a lot of stuff today.
I don't, not to be a commercial, but that product is actually distributed through Austin, Texas, and distributed to hospitals throughout the United States and in Europe.
Wow.
That's amazing.
So how were you settling into your position? Give us a day into Daniel McDowell's life.
Well, thank you for that.
A little window. Give us a view. A view.
Well, it first of all, there is no script. So I'm...
Just like the show.
You know, I'm just a lot of flexibility with the role. I think it's a great opportunity. I'm so pleasantly surprised with the openness and willingness that I've met all different levels of individuals from business to church-based to community organizations, and they're all interested in hearing and very respectful. You know, it's I think I use the term that, you know, I may not be colorblind as far as reds, blues, and purples, but I am, you know, I do have some color challenges because I don't see that. I see people.
Yeah, because again, it goes back to your openness, your friendliness, your honesty, your professionalism, and you're educated enough to where you know how to listen to both sides and give the best, you do the best for the people. And that in itself, you guys, why you should be reelected, I think. When that time comes, trust me, we'll have you back on.
That's right.
So what initiatives are you working on now?
There are several initiatives, and that I would like to take this opportunity to say that we have a human trafficking program. Well, let me back up a little bit, because part of my desire to get more educated, formally educated, is through the University of Lincoln in England on sustainability, because it's a much broader subject. And if I could accomplish anything today, is I'd like to appeal to the audience to know that sustainability is not just about climate.
Mm-hmm.
There are 17 initiatives by the United Nations addressing from poverty to healthcare to education, inequity of women's
inequalities,
rights.
Inequalities, yes.
And so I think when we look at it comprehensively, there's a lot of different factors of, and it fits right into my profile of, you know, I look at economics. I'm a businessman. I look at the environment from the climate, and then I look at people. And the people part of it is we're doing a program on human trafficking that will be in October. We also have Special Olympics. I have a grandson who is autistic, a nonverbal, and that was part of the other reason that I was so interested in getting involved in the local politics, because I was on the board for several years before I ran for city council. But we have, as far as also the United Nations is introducing actually the Chamber of Commerce for the Florida Chamber as a initiative for no poverty. And that's one of my key issues that I'm going to be exploring in the coming year is how can we address the, because here in the Brevard area, there's roughly about a little around 20,000 people that live in poverty. And we need to address that. Yeah. I don't have a solution. That's right. Part of the process is to understanding. And
well, what you're saying, it goes right along with sustainability, is to give everybody a fair start.
Exactly.
And the only way to give people a fair start is that they have to be educated before they bring children into the world. They have to know about the environment. They have to know about recycling. They have to know about an affordable home. They have to know about a job, an education, a trade. So what you're saying is it's a worldwide thing where in order to reproduce and bring children into the world, you have to be educated enough so that you give them a fair start. And if the children are already here, that's why we pay our taxes for social programs to help families and bring them out of poverty. That's what I'm hearing.
Yes, exactly. And I would say if we're on that same vein, when you talk about sustainability from a climate perspective, you were asking what I have been involved in. West Melbourne will be the first city to have a composting
site
facility.
Nice. Yeah.
So I think that is quite an accomplishment. That's kudos to my colleagues on the council and for Keep Brevard Beautiful, which is the partner for that.
So is Hal Rose still the mayor?
Hal Rose is the mayor.
He's a good friend of mine. And I tell you what, West Melbourne is hopping and skipping and jumping, and it looks great. I have a house in Hammock Lakes, and John is my friend and my neighbor, and he's also on the city council. And yes. He's great. He's a terrific friend, and he's like you, very friendly. But I want to know what it is about West Melbourne that everybody is wanting to move to West Melbourne.
Well, I can share with you that I can give you the list. It's
impressive
list.
I mean, it's unscripted. Tell us.
It's low crime. We have one of the lowest millage rates of any city our size, which we are the fifth largest city in Brevard. Roughly 25,000 people live in West Melbourne. Roughly 1% geographic land in Brevard, but about 5% of the population. So let's see, what else about West Melbourne? The housing values are slightly higher than in other parts of
Brevard. You have people that care because the lawns are beautiful, the area is beautiful, everything, so much greenery, green spaces, it's beautiful.
We do have a nice mix of our citizens. We have a good multicultural a Hispanic community is very strong, and so is the Asian community in West Melbourne. As I had done my canvassing, I had realized that. I was like, wow, this is a wonderful experience.
You've got a nice library.
Because
state-of-the-art library, which I love.
And that beautiful John Rhodes Park.
Yes.
Yes. John Rhodes Park is part of the Brevard Park System located in West Melbourne. But our signature park is actually our community park, which is the Field of Dreams.
Yes,
which
gorgeous.
Is what I got my start with, bringing my little grandson to that park because he is a nonverbal autistic.
Yeah. So you don't have a lot of disgruntled citizens in West Melbourne, or do you have a few?
Well, this is live radio, so I'm learning that I better.
That good stuff, you shouldn't have a lot of disgruntled citizens.
We do, but hopefully the citizens know that we do our very best. They may not like our responses, but all of my fellow council members know that we try our very best to satisfy all our citizens.
Yeah. So prior to running for office, you were on the board of the Parks and Recreation. How did that help you to prepare for your role after you ran for office and you won your seat on the city council?
That's a great question. And it really did help tremendously. One is that I learned that the corporate world is very different than the government world, and that there is different rules, there's different accounting practices, there's different, not all of the Roberts rules apply when it comes to government run organizations. And it also exposed me to see what the hot issues are and some of the areas that I needed to focus on were areas that I had no knowledge or experience with, public works, things of that sort, roads. I mean, I just thought they just magically showed up.
And how funds are distributed.
Exactly.
I know, that's like a huge one, right? Because you always read in the newspaper about people who are disgruntled and want things done. But, you know, it cannot be done overnight because there's other projects in the works already.
Exactly. And well, and the other part, just from a leadership perspective, it taught me how to hone in on some of those skills that I needed to, which was team building, listening skills. The jargon was quite interesting because as in healthcare, as your background, which I was in supply chain for 30 years, hospitals are full of initials and jargon, and the same thing for government.
Yeah. Well, you know, we all learn from each other. We learn from history. We learn from past mistakes. God knows life experiences trumps everything. No pun intended, right? And everything. But what would you say to someone who wants to take their life experience and their education and they say, look, I've been involved and engaged in politics and certain boards and things, and now I want to run for office. What advice? Of course, I'm flattered that I was able to motivate you to run for office, but we all know that you could make a difference in this world just by getting involved. But you make a better difference if you run for office. So what advice do you have for people who's sitting on the fence and wants to run?
I would say that if you're like me, you know, there's a fear factor involved in that. And the fear of exposure, you need to be able to be, to thy own self be true, which is very important because you are putting yourself out there. And people, I feel honored and privileged to be elected. I feel that also it's important in this point in my life that being elected is very different than maybe 20 years ago. I'm not making a career out of this political decision. This is about giving back. And so if you carry those attributes and you want to do good for the community and give back, it's very rewarding. I jokingly say to a lot of people, I've been called a lot of things in my life, but never honorable. And I'm called honorable. And so it's very touching.
Well, you touch on a good subject because, you know, we've talked about term limits on this show with certain people. And we've talked about politicians who run for office, and then they're all they think about is re-election and how to bring in the money for the next campaign. And it's almost as though it's a career politician at that point. But you're not that because, like you say, you're based on your age and your family and your life experience, this is given back to the community.
Exactly.
And I think at some point, all of us have to look at the people that we're voting for, why they're running for office, who they are, look at their platforms and what they've done for the communities and come up with our own ideas who to vote for and who not to vote for.
Exactly.
Right? So if somebody wanted to reach you as a sitting council member, how do they reach you?
They could reach me at the city email address, which is, my email address is D, as in Daniel, McDow, M-C-D-O-W, and that's at westmelbourne.gov.
So I didn't know there were things called a political mentor. Did you know that, Sam?
Yeah, I did.
When I ran, I didn't have a political mentor. I was myself, Sita Durgin McGee, Sita the nurse, Sita the radio show, the author, the active, and I'm happy doing the show, making a difference. So what is a political mentor?
Well, there actually, it comes from two fronts. You have in the city politics or municipal politics, you have the elected official, which is if you can kind of envision that it's more of a board. And then you have the actual administration side of it, which is all the city manager, attorney, and things of that sort. And the political mentor I have on both sides of that. I can't even single out from the council members or the mayor or deputy mayor, John Ditmore, how instrumental they've been to me as far as teaching me on that side of the equation. And then on the city side of the equation, understanding the day-to-day, because it's very important to me to understand what it is the citizens elected me to understand the budgets and understand where we need to spend their money appropriately. I need to understand that, and when I do that, I rely on heavily the city manager, Scott Morgan, or the city attorney, Morris Richardson.
It's kind of like you're shadowing them before you got elected.
Absolutely.
I like John Ditmore. He's my friend too. He's the one that lives in that same neighborhood. So in today's world, we have this hyper-political division in the country right now. Do you feel like on the city, you all have any division? Or are you getting things done without all of that nonsense?
Well, I may be on the honeymoon and didn't realize I'm on this honeymoon. But right now, I will say in the last 9-10 months of being an elected official, I have yet to have a disrespectful discussion with any elected official inside the city of West Melbourne, whether they're the state run or the sheriff's department or anything of that sort. So if anything, I would like to dispel that, I may.
Yes, go
is
ahead.
That this is not the real situation is when you're in it, in the throes of your day-to-day operation, you're doing what is in the best interest of who the people elected you to do, for what they elected you to do, which in this case is to represent the city. So that means I need to know how to play in the sandbox properly.
Yeah.
You need to be able to be effective. And the way you can be effective is there's a wealth of knowledge out there by various individuals in various capacities. And I may not agree with their political stance, but when you're talking about a particular issue and it's something that will benefit the city of West Melbourne, I am all over it.
So you're staying positive and you're staying focused on what you were elected to do.
Oh, absolutely. And if I may, there is, I'll say here, indicative of that whole posture is the fact that we have an intern that we partnered with Florida Institute of Technology that is going to be coming on this fall to help us with our sustainability initiatives. So I feel very strongly that we have a very supportive group.
Yeah. So tell me something, Dan. So for our listeners who are tuning in to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, we're speaking with our friend Daniel McDowell. He is an elected member of the West Melbourne City Council. He's also a friend of mine, and I'm just enjoying the unscripted nature in which we're chatting with today. So Dan, really quick, what do you say, what was your biggest challenge in this position so far?
I would say the challenge is getting my arms around and what were the priorities. Because too often we hear, oh, I don't have enough time, or I'm too busy. And it's a matter of priority. It's a matter of what's important. And that took me at least 6 months. Jokingly with Mayor Rose, he said, because I would use the term, you know, I'm on a learning curve. And he said, how long are you going to say that? And so I said, till the end of the year. So hopefully I'm getting to the point of understanding that learning process and understanding how to prioritize.
Time management.
Well, and understanding what the voters want me to work on.
Yes.
You know, and I think that's very important to understand, you know, but I will say if I also there's an area that I it allows me to be involved in things I normally would not have been involved in. For example, I just came from 9/11 Washington, D.C., where I was on the honor flight. I was a guardian. And what experience, and I'm very humbling experience for the vets and myself. And I was so honored to be a part of that. I would not have been able to do that had I not got involved in the political arena.
Yeah, if you weren't elected, I mean, that's one of the perks of being elected.
That's amazing.
It's a good perk.
Daniel, you're very involved in politics and the Brevard DEC, as well as a past fundraising chair and president of the Space Coast LGBTA caucus. Do you have any spare time? What do you do with it outside of politics?
Great question. Well, you know, since I said that I was taking this course, that pretty much takes up a lot of my time. So I really
do you make time for Bill at least?
I
gotta be an advocate for Bill right now.
Well, thank you. thanks, Bill.
Cedar's your advocate.
So really, at this point in time, it's a like everyone, we had to assess where we were at with COVID. This was the perfect timing to use that time.
And do this
constructively.
Course, yes.
And I've always felt like I was falling short on the topic of sustainability. So now I get a global perspective outside of the United States on the international community. And the third bottom line for folks is out there is basically to say, look at the economics, look at the environment, and look at the social or the people side of the equation. And if you can get those three aligned, you've got success.
Yeah. And I want to thank you, Daniel, personally, for always being there. You were with us at the Bacasca events in June for Caribbean Heritage Month, and you always make sure you do a pop-up and a hello, and you've supported my hemophilia events in the past, and that shows a lot to the people. It shows them you're more than just a politician. So that means a lot to us here at Viewpoint with Zita and Friends.
He's a successful politician because he knows how to listen to the people. And what I like about you, your ring is so nice and shiny. And you know what? I see a lot of men who don't wear their wedding rings. Are you wearing yours?
See?
You see what I mean? And that tells a lot about you. That's commitment. It's beautiful because a lot of people don't. Even my husband wouldn't wear his, claiming that it comes off with gloves when he was working.
You better wear it.
I wear mine. So Dan, with the remaining 2 minutes that we have left, what would you say to people who are saying, you know what, right now in our country, there are certain attributes you must have to be a politician. What would you say makes a successful politician?
To thy own self be true.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the first thing.
Mm-hmm.
You are who you are. And people are very intelligent and can see through that.
Right.
They know when you're giving them a line. And I think that I'd rather say I don't know than to give you an answer that is just not true. I also believe that respect is critical. I believe we need to be leaders, not louder. Mm. It's very important. Because I think there's a lot of noise out there right now.
Yeah.
But I think that people want to hear, but they don't want it to be loud and in their face.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, how do we get, we have just a minute left, how do we get more people to understand that in order to reset the economy, we have got to fight this war on COVID? It's like people said, oh, I don't want to be involved, but it is, they're both entwined. The economy is not going to do well if we can't get this virus under control. Wear a mask, get our vaccines.
I would agree with you, and just as I said earlier, if I don't have the answer, I have to be honest. I don't have that answer. I'm living this life alongside of you, and I do believe that there is light at the end of this tunnel. Absolutely.
And you're vaccinated. And you got vaccinated.
And I'm double vaccinated.
Yes,
and
yes.
I pushed very hard to have the students be masked in schools. So, I mean, I do have positions, like I said.
I think we just have to talk to people and understand where they're coming from. Don't bully them, but give them the information and let them decide what they're going to do with it.
Well, they're not wrong. They're just a differing view. I wouldn't even say opposing views. I just say different views.
Yeah. And you have to meet them halfway.
Or sometimes you have to meet them 70%.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all about compromise. A partnership does not mean equality.
That is so one. Well, Sam, you take it away from there because you know what Paul expect you to do.
Today was absolutely amazing. Thank you so much to our wonderful producer, Paul. Thank you to our guests, Fran, Bonnie, Daniel, Zita. Today was an amazing day. I'm leaving here with the only smile on my face. And Paul, take it away. Thank you.
The preceding program may not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of WWBC.